so flavorings, you don't have to put how much of it is in there. But you can tell based on where it is on the ingredient list.
Right.
If it's first on the ingredient list, that means that's the bulk versus if it's last. But still, you're like, oh, it's last on the ingredient list. Not a problem. I don't know. But again, we're not really perhaps measuring how this food makes me feel, right? So I've talked about kind of this, is the food hyper-craveable? Is it hyper-palatable, right? How processed is it, right? We talk about ultra-refined foods mm-hmm. versus refined foods or ultra-processed. Like, what's that mean? Like, how am I going to look at a label and know that it's ultra processed versus just kind of processed?
And why do you want to know that? Because you don't want ultra processed versus processed? Aren't they both kind of in the same camp of being, again, just not a natural food?
Sure. You just say processed, no, but that would be maybe label, no. But, you know, is there some foods that are processed more than others? And is that more of a problem? So, for example, if you're using refined vegetable oils versus using extra virgin olive oil in
okay.
it. Right. Yeah. So is extra virgin olive oil considered processed? It's really not. It's unrefined. But again, right, the chips that I eat, right, I'm looking for them, right, chips, and they're not healthy, right? They got a label on them, the gluten-free ones. But they do have olive oil in them, but it's not extra virgin olive oil.
Oh,
but it's
okay.
olive oil, right? Yeah. But still, I still don't know, did they bake it? Did they fry it? How did they process this? How did they put those ingredients together? How long did they do it? How long did they heat it? Right? Because those are all things that make a difference in the end quality product.
Yeah.
But we don't know that, right? That's not going to appear on a label.
No.
And they're not going to tell you, wow, if you eat this food, you may 10 minutes later want to eat it again, right? This is a hyper-craveable food, right? We don't know. We can't tell taste from a label. That's mm-hmm. not on a label. And how many foods do we buy like we've never had a food before and we decide, hey, I'm going to try this, like blindly. Like you just pick something and say, oh, wow, this looks good because of the color or because of what it is, you know, what you know, some new, I don't know, dried beets. I don't know.
Or cauliflower pizza.
Cauliflower
crust.
Pizza, right? You're like, oh, wow, this fits. This is something that I'm looking for. I'm gluten-free, and so I'm going to do this, right? And you read the label, and you're like, oh, it seems clean, or there's six things on there. Oh, but that's okay because it's gluten-free, and I can do this as a pizza crust versus me making my own pizza crust.
Right, and knowing exactly what the process was and exactly what the ingredients are.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to jump in and thank you for listening to listener-supported WDRT 91.9 in Viroqua. I want to remind you that the Skeptical Naturopath, Paul Rattay, will be giving his 17th lecture on Saturday, May 11th from 9 to 10 in the morning at the Commons on Jefferson Street with a free will donation. And the topic is choice. The paradox of choice. Does it lead to more freedom?
Ooh, wow. Don't know. Wait till next month. We'll talk about that next month. Right? Choice that goes along with us. Maybe we choose not to buy something with a label on it.
All right.
Anyway, so there's that kind of the technical part of label, right? We learn how to read labels. Now there's the front of the label, there's the back of the label, right? And the front of the label is where you put label claims, health claims.
Organic.
And
all natural.
And the FDA and the USDA is really particular if you're going to put a health claim on a label, right? That health claim needs to be, like you can't make claims that haven't been, you know, adopted or you know, I don't know that it's adopted, but you're making health claims that there's some evidence
proven,
to support that.
Yeah, some sort of proven claim.
Yeah, so they'll definitely bust supplement companies and food industry that they're putting things on their label they shouldn't.
Okay, but that's not the organic, natural, free from fats or something like that. I mean,
no, that's not. But right. You can put organic on it, right? But organic means, hey, I've been certified and this is something right. that I've been through. I can use organic. And it does mean something. Natural, what does natural mean?
Right.
And there's no definition of natural.
Yeah.
Free from, right? So it doesn't have any of this in there. Okay, well, it's free from, you know, sugar, or it's kind of funny, right? I mean, you hear when you see, maybe iced tea is an example, right? So if I buy tea, I mean, I make my own, but if I'm buying it, you know, I buy deliberately unsweetened. But unsweetened, they could put low sugar on it, right? Or they could say no sugar, but they don't put that on unsweetened. But then they have the other brand of iced tea that says low sugar or zero sugar. I'm like, wow, why wouldn't they put zero sugar on the unsweetened one? No, zero sugar means that it's sweet, but there's no sugar in it.
There's something else in it.
Ah, there's an artificial sweetener in that. So I already know by just looking at that label that if it's a zero sugar, that I know that it's sweet.
It's, there's
whereas
something
unsweetened,
else.
Yeah. I know there's going to be no sweetness to it.
Wow.
Right? And I just know that. And again, you can look at the back of the label mm-hmm. and then look at that and say, oh, yeah, there's acesulfame potassium. There's artificial flavor. You know, there's artificial sweeteners in there. We could see that. And the thing with artificial sweeteners, they're actually on the label, right? And I mean, we've become accustomed to seeing those right. words on there, like acesulfame potassium, right? We know, or for the most part, that's a sweetener. That's an artificial sweetener.
Acesulfame
potassium?
I don't think I knew that was a sugar,
oh,
actually.
Yeah,
and I've never seen it on any labels that I'm looking at.
Oh, look. If you look in like Diet Coke or, you know.
Oh, well, that's why.
You don't look at those things. You'll see it in other things, too. But okay. anything sweet, you start looking at that, you're going to be able to pick out. They'll put stevia in it. They'll put acesulfame potassium. They'll use saccharin. They'll use, you know, what am I missing there? NutraSweet, but.
Yeah.
Aspartame, right?
Aspartame, that's
so those things are on the label. You can see that, and it's pretty clear, right? I mean, the food industry is being up front about those things. Like, they aren't hiding that. It's just that, do you know that acesulfame potassium is a sweetener?
Right.
And they mix the sweeteners because one sweetener, one artificial sweetener by itself doesn't work very well, right? There may be a bitter aftertaste to it. So they want to put something in that to kind of balance that a little bit.
Amazing.
I mean, food industry is really... really good with this.
Talk to us about the artificial fats. Now, these are interesting. I don't know these names.
Yeah, and if you knew those names,
I'd
maybe
never
you would run,
buy them.
Yes? So here's where clean label goes bad, right?
Right,
so clean
right.
label is certainly the idea that we want disclosure, right? We want transparency. But now we get into these different things that the food industry uses, their additives and preservatives in order to accomplish certain things in their foods, right? So... here's the list, right? So if they want to get a creamy taste, right? So the creamy taste is what they're looking for. They'll use Simplesse. Now, Simplesse, I remember that there's been foods that they used to use that as a marketing tool. They would say it's made with Simplesse.
Right. It's out now, right? It's gone out of fashion. Otherwise.
I guess, yeah. But I don't see it on any labels now. I don't really buy things that I would see that, but maybe I need to look for that. But Simplesse is a trademark product, right? It's a product that the food industry has designed, right? And they don't put Simplesse on the label. What do they put on the label? Well, what it is microparticulated whey protein concentrate. That's what it is. So
God
they microparticulate it. But on the label, you won't see Simplesse. You'll see milk protein.
That's unbelievable.
Or you'll see whey protein concentrate. And you say milk protein, you're like, what do you think when you see milk protein?
I think that they simply just extracted a little bit from wonderful cow's milk. And I feel safe and held, and I'm going to buy this product.
Yeah, I think that's wrong. I mean, so what
that's
is it
so
that they
sad.
Did, and how did they
well,
process it?
Yeah,
how
clearly
did they
if
make
they've
it?
Microparticulated it, they're not just extracting it from the milk.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
No.
Right? Anyways, but that's what you see on the label, milk protein. I can pronounce milk protein.
I know.
It's not unpronounceable. I kind of know what that is, but if it's a milk protein, just milk? Like, why would they put milk protein? Because they had to isolate the protein from the milk. So right. already now they're frankenfooding it, right? They're isolating
right.
and manipulating and doing things and processing and heating or whatever they do to produce that. And then would you eat that if it had Simplesse on the label versus milk protein?
Oh my gosh, never.
But it's derived from milk protein. So they're not lying to you. They're just not using the trademark name of the product that they use.
Well, and they're not really... I mean, just saying milk protein doesn't say that they've microparticulated it or that it came from or that they've concentrated it, right? It's not just microparticulated, it's also concentrated.
Yeah, right.
So what the heck?
And what would we do with that? We see milk protein. You're going to Google it, right? Just Google milk protein and what are you going to get? I'm going to bet you don't come up with Simplesse on there. I mean, maybe it's on there somewhere, but they're not saying, hey, this is a hidden thing. Milk protein, okay, well, it's derived from milk and here's the ways that you can do that. But it could encompass many different things.
No, I've found when you Google these kinds of things, they give you the wiki page that tells
yes.
you the scientific compounds.
Correct.
And that's, you know, obviously a red herring.
Yeah. It'd be
like, do you understand all that? No.
But anyway, so milk protein means it's not milk.
Right.
At the very least.
It's not milk.
It's not milk.
Right.
Whey protein concentrate, it's not whey. They used whey as a substrate of right. which to do other things to it.
Right.
All right. Well, so that's a creamy taste. So if you've got something that's lower fat and you want the creamy taste.
Like a salad dressing,
exactly,
a low-fat salad dressing.
Right. Or ice cream, something like that. Right. So milk protein. Wow. Why don't you just use cream?
Right.
Like, just give me cream.
Right.
Cream's more expensive than milk protein.
Which is ironic because you don't have to do anything to it.
Yeah, but it's just...
right? I'm just saying.
Well, right. And it rots and it goes bad. And Simplest probably sits on the shelf in the food industry
forever.
World for... Yeah, it doesn't go away, right? All right. So that's creamy taste. Bulking agents would include things like Cristalline, Lorelite, D-Lite, all in capital letters. And I don't know if these are all United States, right? I'm kind of maybe mixing things that maybe some of these are in Canada as well. But this is just kind
probably
of part of the laundry
list. Probably for the
most
part, though. If you can find it somewhere else, you can find it
in the
States.
United States. Thickeners would be Slended.
Slended, which is Slended. Interesting because it sounds like slender.
Yeah,
and
I
yet
know.
It's a thickener.
And it's a thickener. Well, okay. It's going to make you slender when you eat that.
Right, because right? it's not a real thickener
exactly.
like gravy.
No calories, right? Calorie free.
Right.
A thickener that, you know, mouthfeel and flow. This is a huge deal, right? Because again, when we're using fat replacers, fat is more of a weight thing than it is a taste.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you think about that, it's the weight in your mouth. And again, it's trying to mimic that. We want that certain mouthfeel, right? So those would be things like Avicel, Methocel, Socafloc.
Jeez.
Cream 5 or 7,000, my favorite, right?
Oh, that's like a movie.
Yeah, Genugel, right? So those are some examples of mouthfeel. So cream 5 or 7,000, how's that listed on the label?
Citrus fiber.
Citrus fiber. So you see citrus fiber in a label. What do you say? We already talked about this.
Yeah, yeah. You've extracted the lovely, pithy, skin of the lemon, you know? I mean, I picture this beautiful lemon orchard where they're pulling all the skins off the lemons. And of course, they're using the juice in something else. And they're just using that as a fibrous addition. Because of course, when I've made desserts, I've done that as well, where you have to, take some of the skin of the citrus. It's unbelievable that they put citrus fiber down. That's so misleading.
Right? Citrus fiber. So it's derived from citrus fiber.
Right.
So citrus fiber is the base.
It might have started as that, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. But they've now manipulated it, and you don't know how much they've manipulated it. And again, at least if you know cream fiber 7000, do a search on cream fiber 7000. Now we're being specific.
Right.
And we can say, what is it? Where is it? How is it made? I want to know these things.
You just said, I don't know what they've done to it or how many things they've added to it. But with a number like 7000, it can't be good.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's...
it's not like cream fiber 3. Jeez.
It does sound like a movie, doesn't it?
It does. It sounds like, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
And
right?
Would you eat that? Would you, if you looked at a label and you see cream 5 or 7,000, I think the warning signs would go up and say, whoa.
I mean, even the first two sound like medicines, Avicel, Methocel.
I don't know what those mean.
Well, think about it, though. Methocel, that's probably a minty flavor.
Yes.
That's, no, because this is artificial fats.
Yeah,
so,
methicel. So, yeah, I don't know what the meth, what's in.
That's weird.
Yeah.
And then carrageenan, I know this from macrobiotics. That's actually a seaweed.
Yeah, and actually carrageenan in and of itself, if you're just eating the seaweed, may not be a problem.
No.
But they take that carrageenan and turn it into other things. So Genugel is an example of
something's been
derived
added,
from
carrageenan. Or added to the carrageenan.
People with IBS, they'll tell you, hey, I got to stay away from carrageenan, right? And that's certainly on the list to say, whoa, this is a problem for me.
Right.
But again, then is citrus fiber a problem? And is milk protein a problem? Right, where we've got these hidden food items that we don't know, but they sound good, right? And that's the food industry now responding to our, let's say, demand as consumers to say, hey, we want transparency. Tell us what you're putting it. And the food industry is like, okay, well, how are we going to do this? And how do we
telling a story. It's just like anything else in the marketing realm of food products. They're telling you a story because, like I said, it's interesting. I have pictures of what I imagine, happy cows, whey protein, happy lemon orchard, citrus fiber. They're telling me a story and they're using words that they know that people are going to associate with one ingredient foodstuffs.
Right. That's the, I talked about that, the optimism bias. Here, I'll read it because I can't remember it off the top of my head. Right?
That's why we have notes.
Yeah, we have notes. Food ingredient perceived as positive can lead to an exaggerated positive assessment of the food as a whole. Right, so one item, if it's a strong enough item and you're really, you know, that's something that's really important, you're like, I'll ignore all the other things. And that's the opposite of the negative bias, which says one negative product may also flavor, you know, color your perception of it and say that's a bad product. And you're just doing it on one thing by itself.
Yeah.
So, again, what am I looking for? What am I looking for on a label? Am I trying to stay away from things? Am I looking for not many ingredients? Am I looking for things that are pronounceable, right? Because it's checking off on Michael Pollan's list,
right?
I mean, you can pronounce it. Citrus fiber, I mean, I have an image of what that is. Unfortunately, that's not what it really is. Mm. So good, bad, is this clean label gone bad, right? I'm not sure.
It's
an adaptation, right? It's the food industry being able to adapt to what the consumer trends are.
Right.
And that's what they're good at, right?
Right. I mean, the end result would be that they wouldn't have as many sales if they were completely open and honest with Crystalline, Simpless, and Genugel. So, I mean, I think we can also say that it's a workaround.
Yeah, it's a workaround.
Yeah.
It is what it is, right? We're in a capitalistic country, and this is the driving force, right? It's profit. Profit, yeah. Certainly over health. If health helps me sell foods, I'll certainly use health to sell a food.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the trend right now. If it wasn't the trend, they would tell us some other story, but that's what we want right now.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's the narrative, right?
Right.
Okay, so then there's maltodextrin too. And maltodextrin is listed as maltodextrin, but again, what's behind it, right? It's considered the miracle starch, right? Adds body to fruit juice. It's a powdery base for potato chip seasoning. It's a fat replacer in dressings and spreads. So they use it and they label it.
Yeah,
but again,
do.
What's it derived from, right? Is it corn? I mean, oftentimes if it's corn or whatever, you just make the assumption like, wow, I could get gluten because I'm eating maltodextrin. That doesn't mean that it's not necessarily not wheat starch.
Right, right.
Because they're not telling me what it's derived from, but it's starch and they're using it for all these different things. But again, at least it appears that way. Where's Cream Fiber 7000? Nope, you won't see that on any label.
Right.
All right, well, so those are artificial fats, right? So then there's also artificial flavorings. I kind of mentioned that, versus natural flavorings, right? So artificial flavoring means that we use gas chromatography, right? This is all chemistry stuff to isolate the flavor components, and then we can say, oh, we can extract that, right? Or we can manipulate that, or we can make that.
Yeah, mimic it.
We can mimic it, and then we put it in there. And we were talking about strawberry flavoring.
Yes, that's the one that seems to be the most off the charts, where you just know that it's not real. Anything strawberry flavored, especially if it says artificially flavored, but even naturally flavored strawberry, it just, you know, if your palate is trained to eat strawberries in season, you'll know that that isn't what strawberries taste like.
Yeah, right. It's that scratch and sniff thing, right? We got to come back to the scratch and sniff. Like, those went out of style.
And you can find them, though.
Can you still find
them?
Yes,
if you can buy them on Amazon, I hate to say, but yes.
I wonder that that's what the food, I wonder if those are, like, things produced by the food industry, right? Or maybe that's what we should do on labels,
they
is you put the scratch and sniff, so at least you have to smell what's in it.
Right.
That would be better.
Remember the pizza one?
Oh, the pizza
one. It was so
one.
Good.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so this is... but let's talk about strawberries for a second. And think about strawberries. Like, when you eat a strawberry, so this is going to come to the... spend a moment on hyper-cravable versus hyper-palatable. So eating fruit... And think about it. When I eat a strawberry, what happens when you eat an unripe strawberry?
Ugh, it's awful.
Yeah, it's hard. It's not soft. What happens when you eat a rotten strawberry? It's a little too sweet. Now it's too soft.
Yeah.
So there's that sweet spot that we're looking for.
Right.
Yes?
Right.
And when you buy the strawberry, do you know that?
No.
You
that's
don't
the worst,
know it.
That's the worst part about strawberries. They can look beautiful, and they can be completely hard and unripe. Yes, it's true.
It's the predictability. Yes. So understand, we like predictability. We like certainty.
Right.
So we want the strawberry, but are we willing to eat a bad strawberry to find a good strawberry? Or you buy a bunch of strawberries and some of them are good and some of them are bad and they look beautiful,
right,
but they taste terrible.
And maybe a sixth of them are thrown away and that's quite sad.
Yeah, right. Or can I freeze them and put them in a smoothie or figure out some other way that maybe I can hide it so that I have it?
Oh,
but again, a strawberry is a strawberry, right? I mean, there's nobody really lying on that package. I mean, it could be organic or not organic, but they didn't really add anything to it.
Right.
But we're taking a risk.
Right.
Right? We're playing Russian roulette to say, hey, did we get a good strawberry? Did we get a bad strawberry, right? So that goes back to, remember my watermelon story, right? So this is the watermelon that I had in North Carolina that was the best watermelon.
You'll never forget it.
I'll never forget it. And everything I eat is compared to that. And think about it. I have the idea of what a perfect strawberry is.
Yes, same with the peach, right?
Perfect peach.
Yeah.
So I have that in my mind. I know what that is. That's the palatable, right? That's maybe hyper-palatable. It's the liking part. Mm-hmm. And we're seeking out things to mimic that, right? We want to reproduce that. And it's like, okay, well, does it matter time of year? Does it matter where I buy it? Do I have to buy it from one person versus another person?
I was going to say CSAs are the best for this because it seems like every fruit is delectable.
Yes.
That's
so
definitely.
They're already choosing for you, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
And they're invested in the person that's buying their product because if I give you a crappy strawberry, you're not going to be in my CSA next year.
Right. Or consistently.
I mean,
a bad one here and there, but you're right. They're going to definitely be taste testing and making sure.
And they'll give it to you when it's in season. They're not going to give it to you out of season. Because right now, can we go buy strawberries at the grocery store?
Only from Cuba or...
Yeah, Chile or wherever,
you
know. So that's the idea. Like, so we're shipping it how far? And is that good? And when was it picked? And does that make a difference?
And what did they do to preserve it to this point?
Don't know about that. Like, how about those apples that we can still buy Honeycrisp apples now in April?
Right.
Who's picking Honeycrisp apples?
Right.
I think they use nitrogen packing. They're able to preserve it longer, right? They're using ways that they can preserve those apples longer so they don't rot.
And nitrogen isn't bad.
Well, no, but so it's another preservative way. It's another way that they're able to preserve that, right? So understand that, again, is that a problem? Is it not a problem? Is salt the problem? Or what are we preserving? We're preserving an apple. We're preserving cod. We're preserving rice noodles. We're preserving chips.
Right.
I'm not sure, right? Maybe that there's more worth in preserving something that's protein-based rather than something that's...
A chip?
Yeah, a chip. A processed carbohydrate that they just process further.
Thank you so much for tuning in to listener-supported WDRT. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Rattay and Christina DeRocher. Next month, May 11th, will be the 17th in Paul Rattay's Obstacles to Cure series. It will be Saturday, May 11th from 9 to 10 in the morning at the Commons on Jefferson Street. He's asking for a free will donation. Show up with your questions, and the topic will be choice, the paradox of choice. Does it lead to more freedom?
Ooh.
It's great when you have a cliffhanger. You should always have one of those. I mean, most of them are actually pretty good, but this one's like a question. That's great. Marketing. Yeah. You're telling a story, right?
Telling a story, right?
Reel people in.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So, I mean, let's talk about clean label. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? And understand, how much do we use the label to make a choice in the grocery store?
A lot. I mean, I do. I for sure do. And I won't forget the citrus now or the Milky Way, the milk protein. That's sad.
So we're dependent upon that label. And understand, we're dependent upon the label. Why are we so dependent upon a label when we go to the grocery store?
Because we didn't make it.
What
and
else?
It's processed and we know it. So, I mean, why are we looking at the label in the first place? Because it's not a banana.
We want a healthier processed food.
Right. We're trying to do the best we can
in
the middle of the aisles of the
grocery store. And again, we may then make that choice depending on where we shop, right? So then we give trust to the grocery store to say they've vetted out things, right? Whether it's a natural store, whether it's Whole Foods, whether it's Trader Joe's, you know, whatever, that we then say, oh, well, you've kind of been my filter that you're only going to put good products on the shelf.
It's so true, actually, because a local store that has this... They're trying to be more, what's the word I want? They're trying to get their customers to come to them because they're making these choices for them, right? And
yes.
They're saying, please come and shop at our store because we're making these first line choices for you, saying we're not going to buy things that are like this or like that. We're going to buy the best possible, as opposed to going into Whole Foods when you know it's a conglomerate right now owned by Amazon. I'm definitely reading every single one of those labels.
Yeah, and then do we care about produce there? So what do we do with produce? Right, so produce doesn't have a label on it.
No.
So now we don't have any quote-unquote processing unless they've stored it somehow. Maybe there's other things that we're not sure about. But again, how, maybe the goal is to avoid the label. Like if we buy a label, we already know that we're getting something that's of inferior value to something that's fresh along those lines. So is the goal to say, hey, how do we remove, how do we buy foods that don't have labels on them? How do we shop the bulk bin, right? We kind of talked about this. Like, what did we do in 1869?
Yeah.
Were there labels on food? There was no legislation. The government didn't say, here's what you got to put on a label. Somehow today we have that, right?
Right.
But that we'd go and buy basically it from the bulk bin, right? You'd go to the general store and you'd buy sugar and they'd weigh it out and give it to you. You didn't really question, like, where did that sugar come from?
No.
Or the flour, right?
Because,
the flour.
I mean, we didn't have the infrastructure to be shipping things all over the world
Correct.
At that time anyway, so there wouldn't have been that question.
The local, you know, miller is the one that produced it. So
right.
he's producing it, and he's giving it to the selling to the general store,
the
and then they're selling it to you.
Providing
right?
the butter.
Yeah, very close-knit that we're within the, you know, geographical range of where that food was produced.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't be eating oranges in Wisconsin.
No, or bananas.
No, they don't grow
right?
here.
I mean, you know, in my macrobiotic days, you had a dictum of it has to be within 500 square miles.
Yes.
So if you can find it within 500 miles of where you live, then it's, quote, local, and you can eat it. So, I mean, I raised Anna Lena. She didn't have a banana until she was like 12. I mean, maybe just last year. She actually doesn't like bananas. But
because she didn't eat them all along, right?
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, bananas, I don't know. Side note. I've noticed bananas seem to taste like stevia to me. Like, I'm getting this stevia taste from bananas. Not all the time, but it's very weird.
Like very sweet?
No. It's that stevia sweet thing, right? Mm. But I'm like, it tastes like stevia.
Interesting.
I don't know what that is. I don't like stevia, right? So this is, in my
right,
book,
it's a
not
negative
a good thing.
Yeah.
But I've eaten other bananas, but it seems fine. But this is something I've noticed along with Gabriel. Like, do you think this tastes like stevia?
Interesting.
He's like, yeah. And again, not all the time, but I've noticed that, like, there's some difference in that. But maybe that's like eating the strawberry and getting an unripe strawberry, and maybe I'm getting a banana that's not as consistent, right? Maybe there's not so consistent. You know, maybe I need to understand that maybe not all bananas should taste the same way.
Yeah, right.
And but you're playing, you know, Russian roulette with that.
Well, yeah. I mean, those are definitely shipped. In fact, I even lied to Annalena's early kindergarten teachers and said she was allergic to tropical fruit. Oh, my goodness. She said, even in kindergarten, Mom, I was like, what is happening? Because one of her classmates brought a fruit salad and it had tropical fruit, and the assistant went and cut her up an apple and said, your mom would like you to have this. She was like, even in kindergarten, I was like, what the heck is my mom doing now? And it was because I was so strict about everything should be local. Because, and I mean, I was wrong, and we've since laughed about it, and I've apologized, and it's kind of a running joke now. But the point is, you know that when you're buying local, or you don't know, but there's more of a chance that it isn't messed with.
Yes.
Because when you're shipping things from so far away, I mean, where do kiwis grow? Do they grow in Minnesota? Do they grow in Wisconsin? So what are they doing in order to keep them fresh enough to even make it to the grocery shelves in Wisconsin? That was my thinking, you know. And again, macrobiotics very much informed me in that way. But, you know, and salt and seaweed were the only exceptions because we had trade routes as soon as we started trading. What were we trading? Salt and seaweed. Things from the sea, you know, we were trading them on land because
that are preserved from just being dried, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
No chemicals involved in there.
Right. Yeah. But you would eat local meat, right? You weren't
yes.
having seal meat in, you know, Texas or
nope.
whatever. So yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, there's something to it. There is something to it. Local.
So we avoid the label, but then we still eat bananas. You know, and what level do we make the choice? On what level do we say, hey, I'm going to eat this, I'm not going to eat it? Is it better to eat a banana than it is to eat, you know, Ezekiel bread?
Yeah.
I mean, these
right.
Ezekiel bread is processed. I mean, it's processed.
It is, yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, that's what I eat. You know, this is what I choose to eat, and it's dense, and you got to chew it, but it's still processed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make it. but they quote unquote use better quality. You know, they sprout the grain, what have you. It's frozen. It doesn't keep as long.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? It's still in a package. I'm not going to make Ezekiel bread. Maybe I should just not eat bread. Yes? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, I think that, you know, naturally leavened bread or sprouted is a good thing. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, even talking about how often we have meals, right? The schools have this snack.
Yes.
A snack is the bane of a parent's existence,
oh my gosh,
in my opinion.
For sure. More eating occasions.
Yes. And the worst part is you can talk your kid into eating a good breakfast. You can definitely provide a good dinner. You can, you know, outsource the lunch if they're eating it at school. Okay. But this snack, it's always this push-pull with my daughter. I'm like, I really want it to be another healthy, you know, addition to your day. And she's like, come on, Mom, it's, quote, just a snack. But it's once every single day. And
yes.
So I will buy barbecue chips, you know, every 3 or 6 weeks, you know, and I'll say, oh, she hasn't had them in a while. So, right? And I'm not reading the label anymore because I already know that stuff's got sugar in them.
So I've learned this with Gabriel. So this is about, you know, I pack what he packs and then I see what comes back.
Yes.
And what does he eat and what does he not eat? And I'm very consistent that I know what he's going to eat and what he doesn't eat. And again, how many things or how many, and maybe this is, I haven't really done this with school, but certainly seen that. Like, when is it that he's actually going to eat a can of sardines?
Yeah.
He got to be a little desperate, right?
Right.
Because if I put cuties in there and I put hummus and I put hummus and I put carrots in there, or I put my, you know, my quote unquote healthy chips, they're not healthy, but you know, this kind of thing that, you know, he's going to always go to them first.
Right.
If I only give him the option of the sardine will get eaten, right? So again, I'm giving him too much choice when I pack his lunch.
Right. Right.
But I don't think that he's going to appreciate going to school and open a can of
sardines.
Right? So
right.
I won't
think
do
that's
that.
That's child abuse.
Yeah, exactly. But if we're not at school, then maybe I do that and then I'm deliberate. Like, oh, all we have is sardines. How hungry are you? Well, I don't want any sardines. Well, maybe you're not that hungry. And maybe you don't need a snack, right? Because again, that snack is another eating occasion.
After school as well,
oh,
right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The best thing that I think we could do is just, if we did nothing else, eat processed food, what have you, is to say we have 3 30-minute windows a day to eat, and that's it.
Yes.
You got a 30-minute window in the morning, 30-minute window.
Okay, but why can't it be an hour?
Where we're not
actually eating the entire time, but we're talking. And,
okay, that's fine.
Right, okay.
I'm totally fine.
Because
right?
I hate these short lunch periods. They drive me crazy, too. I don't feel like they're human.
Yeah,
we should sit and talk, you know, and chew.
Yeah, so, okay, so let's
right, so
just
three
say there's
hours.
3 hours, but again, deliberate, right? So there's this
yes.
period of time in between that you can't snack.
Right, right.
There's no eating in between there. You wait until the next meal. I mean, I remember that as a kid.
Oh, my
wait
gosh.
Wait till dinner.
Wait till dinner.
You'll spoil your dinner,
right. I mean, and we can say a handful of nuts or whatever, right? There can be some emergency backdrop that has to do with something that is, you know, very, very low key as far as spoiling your next meal. Exactly.
Well, are you hangry? And if you're hangry and you say, well, you can't eat, this person's in a lot of trouble if somebody's hangry. What we need to do is get them so they're not hangry.
Let's go back to looking at what they had for the meal.
Exactly. So what did they do? How could they eat proactively so they don't get hangry instead of being dependent upon that snack? Or being dependent to say, hey, I can eat something every 2 hours, right? That's the grazing aspect. And I'm going to say grazing is very beneficial with people with reactive hypoglycemia. Because they do that, they prevent going hangry.
Right.
So they eat something so their blood glucose doesn't fall. The problem is they're constantly eating.
Right.
And probably that they've made better choices or different fuel choices in the morning, more than likely, that then they don't go on that roller coaster that they have to eat 5 times a day.
I know. And this goes back to what do you have for breakfast?
Yes, correct.
And that, you know, back in the day, just like when we would go and get our oats weighed at the local place, right, where the oats were grown in the, you know, the county over, we would also eat leftovers from dinner. I keep trying to tell my daughter this. I'm like, can you just have the rice and beans and veggies and soup that we had for dinner for breakfast? No, Mom. It's got to be what? Carbs. It's got to be oats. I mean, she's very, you know, we don't have cereal or anything like that. But it's not I'm always, I'm on a breakfast crusade. Like, how can I get her to eat?
But again, it's in the house, right?
So right.
If it's in the house, it's available. So how do we, but then it's not in the house. If I only have sardines in my house, but I got to take a step back. If you're eating sardines, you may get some heavy metal toxicity. If you're eating three, who is this? Who, somebody did that. They were eating three cans of sardines a day.
And they had some metal. Toxic.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was cadmium or I'm at a loss at who that was. But again, so that's not the idea. Oh, the sardines are the end all be all. But the idea being like, what do you have available to you? Mm-hmm. What's in my house? Right. There was some art exhibit somewhere that they said, are our large kitchens making us fat? So they did an actual, you know, exhibit on how big the kitchen is today, or I mean, this is probably 10, 15 years ago, compared to what the kitchen was like 100 years ago.
Right. And you know this from old houses. I mean, I guess my house has not been upgraded since its 1925 birth, and I have hardly any space in my kitchen. Yeah. That's, I mean, if you really want to look at it that way, yeah, I can only store so much. But of course, I bought IKEA shelves. My dining room, and now that's basically my storage.
What about plates? Would they fit big plates in them when you moved in? I mean, because I've heard this, that the big plates don't even fit.
I don't know, because I have an island. I have a wheeled island in my kitchen as a result of not having a lot of space. But you're right. Our plates have even gotten bigger over the time. Oh my gosh, yes. It's so crazy, right?
And what's available to us. We have that availability, and we have that food within, you know, within, we can go in the kitchen and get it at any moment in time.
Right.
And then they get used to it, children, mm-hmm. and then that's what they want, right? So, I mean, I go through this battle with my older boys all the time, right? I'm like, you know, they want chips and they want, did I tell a hummus story? I'm sure I told this story. So hummus, right? So hummus, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like that's the perfect food, right?
Perfect food.
Well, okay. I mean, perfect food, you know, it's beans and it's
protein,
fat and it's, you know.
Yeah.
And they love hummus, right? So bless their hearts, but they want chips with the hummus, right? And I'd be like, well, you know, and I go in my phases where I'll buy chips and then I won't buy chips and then I'll buy chips. And again, that's not good, right? It's better just to not ever have chips.
Oh, yeah.
And then during those times, it'd be like, well, I have corn tortillas. You could put them in the toaster oven and turn them into chips. No, no, no. I want chips. And so I'm like, well, there's carrots. There's celery,
right?
This is the thing. And funny thing is, if you give me carrots, the choice between carrots and celery, I'll choose carrots every single time.
Oh, me too.
You got to have no carrots for me to eat the celery,
right?
Or peanut butter or something. Maybe that's a better carrier for that. That's curious too. But anyway, so they had that available to them, and they were like, "Oh, we want chips. We don't want to eat anything else." And I knew it was working they weren't eating it. But they would just, I found the spoon in the hummus one day in the morning. They're just eating the hummus by the spoon. I'm like, that's fantastic. I want you to eat the hummus.
Yes.
What you put it on is just the carrier for you to get hummus.
Right.
And we'd rather have that carrier not being negative, right? And
right.
maybe that there's some positive to eating a carrot or eating celery versus the chip. But then it becomes, you know, and I'll do that too, right? I mean, I'll eat my quote unquote healthy chips. They're not healthy. But, you know, how much hummus can I put on a chip? Oh my gosh, I could put a lot of hummus on a chip because I want the hummus. I want the crunch, like the crunch is good.
Yes.
But it's really the hummus. And if it's good hummus, where you got the je ne sais quoi and you got that lemon and you got the garlic and you got the right mix.
It carries itself.
Exactly. So just use a spoon.
Right.
Anyways, that's what my older boys resorted
to. Or put it on bread. We used to spread
it on bread.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Ezekiel bread.
Hey, but let's talk about bread. We mentioned this before, right, about the different kinds of bread. Can you share what we talked about? Remember, we talked about buying the bread local versus buying the bakery.
Oh, yeah. So we buy the local bread that's made fresh all the time. And because we're only a family of two, we freeze half the loaf. So we'll go through the half loaf. And it's a large loaf, too.
It's a bread from Magpie, right? Is it?
Yeah.
It's great bread.
It's excellent bread. Rhythm Bakery is what they're called.
Gabriel can't hear this, right? Because he's gluten-free. So if I eat that, it's got to be when
they don't make it gluten-free?
No.
Okay. You could ask them.
I mean,
they're young and spry. They could maybe take something new on. Anyway, so we eat half a loaf, and it maybe takes 3 or 4 days to eat that half a loaf. And then I thaw the other half right before the first half is almost gone. And then it takes another 3 or 4 days. And every once in a while, I'll say, should we get like an Alvarado Street bread? Now, that's, you know, your local I mean, not local, it's actually California, but your bagged bread. Now, it is wheat, and I think it's even sprouted, or you can get it sprouted,
yes.
And that's the kind that we buy. And I'll say, do you want to get some Alvarado Street bread? Yeah. It's always this excitement. It's like, do you want to get cereal, right? Which I never say. And so, but when we get this bread, it's gone in 3 days, the entire loaf. All of a sudden, we have to have 2 pieces of toast every morning for breakfast. We might toast some to have with our soup in the evening. We might have a sandwich in the afternoon. This might all happen in the same day even. But the loaf is gone in 3 days, the entire loaf. And it is a, I mean, it's a longer loaf, but smaller pieces. But I mean, it's crazy. And so we just recently did this again. And I go long periods before I buy things like that, like the barbecue chips, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, it might be months, you know? And so I just noticed it again when this loaf went away. And I said, wow, you know, it's obvious that there's obviously dense nutrients that have satiety from the Rhythm Bakery, where you just don't go to it the whole time. You're not eating them every single day. But Alvarado Street bread, I mean, I love it anyway, and I'm not saying it's a bad bread,
right.
But it's akin to that sort of, you know, white bread mentality of like, you just eat it all the time. And it's light, it's definitely lighter, and it's fluffier. And yeah, so that's what we noticed about bread is that, you know, there, of course, there are gradations of,
right.
Yeah.
And you can't see that on a label, right? So the label does not represent that.
Right.
So this is a nuance, right? And you're a health, I mean, I'm going to put you in the top 3% of eaters.
Oh.
Yeah, for sure. You're the quality of the food that you eat. So, but just knowing that, you know,
as
all these things.
As much as I annoy Annalena with it, that's why I was surprised. I'm like, but she's so irritated all the time. Mom, I want a snack. And I mean a snack, but, not healthy.
But she'll thank you later.
Yeah.
28.
Actually, you know what though? Actually, we just had a conversation and we were talking about the lies about tropical fruit,
yeah.
and the first birthday party that she was invited to, I think she was 4. It was to Chuck E. Cheese. This is when we lived in Illinois. And we brought our own pizza.
Oh, yeah.
We brought our own pizza. And I'm telling you, even the sauce was not tomato based. This was hardcore macrobiotic. This was beet and carrot and onion and bay leaf. And a little bit of celery, blend. You would pressure cook those vegetables and then you would blenderize it. And the beet would lend a little sweetness, but also the color of a typical sauce. I mean, that's how strict we were. And the toppings were shiitake mushroom, pepper, and broccoli, okay, and onion. Anyway, we brought our own pizza. And then one time her friend had a dance recital at the Temple Theater. This was years later. And this is when Dave's Pizza was still open. And I think I even told her then she couldn't get the pizza. She had to get fries. So we were talking about these three monumental moments that she really remembers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what, honey? I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry that I did that. You know, I was so strict. And if I had known now that you barely go to those outings, that it's not a big deal to do that every once in a while. And she said, and I quote, you know what, Mom, though? I'm really attracted to healthier foods, I think, as a result. I think you did the right thing. She has already said that. I know, right?
Yay! That's why we do it.
I was surprised that she said it, because she's 13 and really would appreciate eating more sugar, I think, just because of her hormones and things like that,
yeah.
Right? But you know, and I'm not as strict. I definitely now, I mean, you know, we've gone to Jumpstart and had birthday parties and eaten other people's cakes and all that kind of thing, but... You know, but she already has recognized that her palate is different. She said, when kids bring me things, you know, and they say, try this, I do. But I'm immediately like, that's not good. And then I recognize, too, that actually the flavor isn't that great, that I do like more naturally flavored things. So
right. You train the palate. That's our
right?
job, right? Help
That's
train
the
their
job.
Palate
and
give
I told
them
her,
varieties of things to try so they know what bitter is, so
right.
they know what sour is.
Right. I mean, I just finished, you know, 3 little associate degrees at Western Tech. And I tell you, we have been eating a little bit more openly, you know, some frozen burritos from time to time because I've been doing PowerPoint presentations during college
yes.
and all of that. And I told her, I said, I know when you go to college, you're going to make choices that are based on convenience and quickness because you're busy and you want to get a good grade and all of that. I said, but I'll know that I've done the foundational work. That's what that was my job, right? That's still my job for another 4 years. But yeah, the foundation needs to be laid for the palate. Anyway, we should go.
All right. That's great.
Okay.
Fantastic. That's a fantastic story.
Yeah,
thanks.
So this has been Obstacles to Cure with the Skeptical Naturopath, Paul Rattay. and Christina DeRocher. Thanks so much for listening to listener-supported WDRT 91.9. We'll see you next month.
Thanks, Christina.
Thank Bye-bye. You, Paul. Bye-bye.
My name's Tim O'Brien.
Aloha, this is Daryl Scott. This is 91.9 FM WDRT, Viroqua, Wisconsin.
And you're at the right place. Don't touch the dial.